As our main speaker for the evening, DK from San Diego.
My name is DK. I am an alcoholic.
Hi, DK.
I'm a real alcoholic as defined by page 21 of our text, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which means I stand before you a sober man only by the graces of a very loving God and the miracle that is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like to say congratulations to Gary, Aaron, Gene, and my friend Bill. If you be an alcoholic of my type, any day sober is a miracle. To put any number of days together in a row, it's nothing less than a gift from God. Welcome to our visitors. Come from a long way. Welcome. And congratulations and welcome to our newcomers. Being a member of this fellowship for me has meant that I never, ever, ever have to drink again. And I never have to be alone. And drunk and alone was something I knew a whole lot about before I got here, right? Welcome. And I hope you find here what I found here. A little peace, a little integrity, a little wisdom. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1995. I have a sponsor. He knows that he's my sponsor. I have taken other men through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. A couple years ago, I served as a co-chair in San Francisco for H&I, taking meetings into jails. And my home group is Cedar Street Sunday Morning Men's. I tell you these things to let you know that today I'm in the grips of aggressive recovery, that I'm right in the middle of the boat, and that's just where this alcoholic needs to be, right in the middle of the boat. There are many people in this room who I know who have much more time than I do, and there are some in this room that I know that have a lot less. And you know what? I like it like that. I like it like that. I hope she speaks Negro. What it was like, you know, I don't like to spend a lot of time talking about what it was like. We all know what it was like. We all know what the mess was. Let's just say I drank the required amount in the required way to be a member of this here fellowship. And I did all the things that we, as members, must do to get here. I will say this. I didn't become an alcoholic because my daddy beat me or my mommy didn't hug me. I was born in the Midwest to a middle-class family who did everything they could to see to it that I had the opportunities that never had, that they never had. There was no trauma. There was no abuse. There was really no reason for me to be what I became. Can't blame the family. I will say that as a child, I never felt like I really belonged anywhere. I didn't fit. I was that kid, always like a half a beat behind the music. I never felt right. I tell the story. I have a grandson. And one day he was doing something, and his father, my son-in-law, looked at him and gave him that look. And I recognized that look. That was the same look my father used to give me. That, what the hell is wrong with this kid look? I was that kid. I mean, if he could have taken me back to the kid store and got a new one, I'm sure he would have. Because this one was broke. But I just didn't feel like I fit anywhere. Now, when I was in third grade, my family moved me from the inner city of Cleveland, Ohio, to the suburbs. And I went from a neighborhood where the only white people I saw were on TV to a neighborhood where everybody was white. Now, not only did I feel different, I looked different. I talked different. I was different. And at 8 years old, I was ill-prepared to deal with that difference. Now, my parents had cocktail parties on the weekends. So it was at an early age that I equated adult entertainment with drinking. So to impress my newfound suburban chums, I drank. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, from the first moment, liquor worked. Liquor worked. I didn't feel apart from. I didn't feel inferior. I didn't feel different. Liquor worked. It really did. And it became my solution. I did not drink to get loaded, although I did get loaded when I drank. I drank just to maintain. I drank just to be okay around you. I needed liquor because I couldn't deal with the world without help. Let's fast forward through all the nightmare, the divorces, the missed opportunities, the destroyed relationships. I ended up homeless in Hollywood. I ended up invisible. We see homeless people, we don't really make eye contact with them. We look around them, we look over them, we look through them, but we never look at them because we never know what they're going to do. They become invisible to us, and that's what I was. I was that guy with the Windex and the newspaper on the freeway exits, messing up your windshields for change. I was a squeegee guy. Oh, don't let the smooth taste fool you. It was bad. Now, there are things that had happened before I got there. One of the things I hate, even to this day, is pain. I hate pain. And nothing hurts more than a look on a loved one's face when we as alcoholics screw up again. Okay? That look they give you when you tell them, no, there is no rent money because I drank it up. That look they give you when you say there is no Christmas this year. Because I messed up the money again. That look they give you when you come back after a week when you told them you were going out for a pack of cigarettes and swear that you're never going to do it again, but in your heart you know you are. That look they give you, that how could you do this to us again? That look. It's painful. It's painful. So I did what any self-respecting alcoholic would do. I left. So I would not have to be around. I had tried suicide on a number of occasions, but I lacked the courage of my conviction. So I decided that since I could not do it myself, I would find somebody to do for me what I couldn't do. So I used to watch television, and when there was gang battles and gang wars in neighborhoods, that's where I would go to get loaded. That way, maybe somebody could take me out of my misery. I remember there's a place called the Junkyard. It's just north of Long Beach in Wilmington. Okay, it's where crackheads go to die. And I was getting loaded up there in the yard. And I remember the car came around the corner, the window came down, the gun barrels came out, and I heard the pop, 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 pop. Everybody dove for cover, everybody except for me. This is what I had been waiting for. This is what I had wanted. So I stood tall. God, take me. I cannot live like this anymore. But God didn't. And it had the exact opposite effect of what I intended. From that moment on, everybody around the junkyard would point at me and say, "You see that brother right over there? Don't mess with him. That Negro crazy." Which is how I ended up in Hollywood. Maybe in Hollywood somebody would do for me. Well, you know, I was in Hollywood. I was sleeping under a bridge like a college-educated troll. My first sponsor made me say that all the time. He said, "You let them know you were living like a troll." Okay. doing my little squeegee thing, which wasn't really paying very well. They say that the first year in sobriety is the toughest year. They say it's very difficult. No. It was a year before the first year that kicked my ass, all right? I'm sleeping under a bridge, all right? I put so much work into getting loaded, so much effort into getting loaded. I used to get loaded in trees over here in Balboa Park, all right? Because the police won't climb the trees, right? All right? They'll just shine the flashlight up there and say, hey, you, come on down. And I take that last blast, I'd say, I'd be right there. Because if I'm going to jail, baby, it ain't going to be for possession. Huh? I used to get loaded in cemeteries, hiding behind tombstones. Because if you're in a cemetery and somebody asks you to share what you have, you're already too high. A lot of work went into getting loaded. Hard is not taking the steps. Hard is trying to get loaded with no money. Huh? That's tough. Well, when you live on the street, you run into what they call the criminal element. All right? And these guys approached me and they said, look, we need somebody to be the inside man. Now, I don't know what the inside man is, but it sounded pretty doggone cool, don't it? Turns out the inside man's the guy that gets a fake ID, goes inside the bank, and cashes a forged payroll check. I became the inside man. It was early November. It was a Monday. All I wanted, man, all I wanted was a six-pack of St. Pauli Girl. I wanted a hotel room so I could get out from under that bridge just for one night. And I wanted to watch me some Monday night football. That's what my life had been reduced to. That's all I wanted. So I took me one of these fake payroll checks. I went to the Food for Less on the corner of Sunset and Western. And that's where I got pinched. The popo slapped me up, knocked me around a little bit like they will do. Took me into the Hollywood station. And he says, what is your name? And I said, my name is DK. And he says, you're going to sit right there until you're ready to talk to us. And I said, okay. And an hour later, he came back and he said, your name really is DK? I said, yeah. He said, well, normally when somebody gets a fake ID made, they don't put their real name on it. I said, well, you know, I'm not really a criminal. You know, I'm a drunk and a crackhead. They took me down to the downtown, to the fraud division, downtown L.A., set me down in front of a detective, and he said, look, it's pretty obvious you have no idea what you're doing. Right now, you're looking at 5 years state time. I'm sure if we investigate more, there'll be more checks we'll find. You tell us who put you up to this, and we'll see to it you get the help that you need. I know the rules. You do the crime, you do the time. That's right. You take responsibility for your actions. Is that right? Did I mention I was an alcoholic, huh? I had never taken responsibility for anything, and I sure as hell wasn't going to start looking at state 5 years state time. What's that movie with Denzel, Flight, where he's almost out, he's almost done, and he tells the truth? Is that some BS or what? I sang like Ella Fitzgerald, baby. I told on everybody and everything. So they put me in county jail for about 3 days. They rounded up my little band of thieves. And they let me back out into the same neighborhood that I was arrested in. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I'm an alcoholic. I had that, where's everybody at look? You know the one we get, right? What happened? I gamed up on some money. I got a hotel. I got some product. Got me some liquor. Got me some friends. If I had known this was the last time I was going to get loaded, I'd have had a bigger party. It was the next morning, and that sun was starting to come up. And I had that brief moment that we as alcoholics all must have, that brief moment where you're coming down and you have not yet got anything to go back up with, that brief moment in time where you can no longer buy your own BS. This was no longer her fault, his fault, their fault, or your fault. This mess was my fault. And if I didn't do something, nothing was going to change. Believe me when I tell you, the consequences of my drinking are not what brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous. What brought me here was a realization that those consequences would never end. It was going to be just like this until I died. That's what brought me here. I had that brief moment, and I did the old AA prayer. God help me. And God showed up. I took my little $5 key deposit, got on the bus, and went down to the Veterans Hospital in Brentwood, and I begged a man to let me in. I had had enough. I had had enough. That's where my recovery began. A little bit about this, okay? I knew long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous that I was an alcoholic. I couldn't put the words around it that we do now, but I knew I was not right. I was convinced that my drinking was not normal. What I wasn't convinced of is that the solution that was being offered by you would work for me. Okay? See, I had real problems. I had a unique background. I was not like you. And these little voodoo steps on the wall, I needed something of a bit more substance. So I thought. But I made my mind up that I was going to do everything you guys suggested to do. I was going to do it to the best of my ability. I was going to do it thoroughly. I was going to do it honestly. So when it failed, I can look you in the eye and say, see, it doesn't work for people like me. I was introduced to the first step while at Brentwood in the VA hospital. I'll share with you what was told to me because it resonated for the first time. The guy said there are people who are allergic to shellfish. We all know them. They eat shellfish, they swell up, they turn red, they damn near die. I'm allergic to alcohol. You put liquor in my body and I will break out in homelessness and handcuffs. I guarantee you. I guarantee you. The difference between me and the gentleman that's allergic to shellfish is 2 weeks from now, you can't go to that guy and say, dude, Red Lobster, what do you think? Huh? Because he's going to say, no, 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 no. Last time I did that, I damn near died. But 2 weeks after I ended up face down in the gutter, drunk on my ass, you can come up to me and say, DK, how about a beer? And I'll say, okay. Because this time, baby, this time is going to be different. This time I'm going to have a couple beers and I'm going to go home. This time, a few glasses of wine and I'm gone. This time, a $20 rock and I'm on bounce. All right? This time it's going to be different, but of course it is not. Once I put that liquor in my body, I'm off to the races. I may come home, I may not. I have no idea what's going to happen. So I've got a body that cannot handle this stuff, man. And I got a mind that tells me it's absolutely okay to try. And the reality of that paradox is I'm screwed. And if you be an alcoholic of my type, you be screwed too. It's going to take a miracle for me not to drink tonight. It's going to take divine intervention. That, my friends, is powerlessness. And for whatever reason, when it was explained to me that way, it resonated here in my heart. I at last understood what powerless was. Well, the first step is like a sucker punch. If you admit you're an alcoholic and acknowledge that you are 100% powerless over alcohol and you don't want to drink, you better find you some power and you best find it with a quickness. They told me the steps. So I got a sponsor, not because I wanted a sponsor. I didn't need anybody to tell me how to read. I'm a college graduate. I can figure this thing out. But they told me to get a sponsor and go through it with a sponsor. For those of you who are new, I'm going to deviate a little bit here, and you haven't got a sponsor, a guy named John L. should say, if you are new without a sponsor, your life is in the hands of an asshole. You know, we hear this nonsense like, oh, I'm looking for somebody I can relate to. I need somebody I can relate to. Look, if you go out on that street and get hit by a car and your life is flowing out of you and they scoop your butt up, put you in the meat wagon and take you to the hospital, will you look for a doctor you can relate to? Or will you look for the first guy in a white coat to stitch your ass up? While you're looking for somebody you can relate to, you might drink. And if you're like me, if you drink, you may die. That's how serious I got this thing. And if you're like me, you better find somebody that knows what you're doing. Anyway, I got a sponsor who spent most of his time laughing at me. He laughed at me all the time. If you have a if you're new and you have a sponsor who laughs at you all the time, it's not about you. He's laughing because you are saying the same stupid stuff that he used to say when he was your age, okay? Yeah. All right? My sponsor started me off on my journey on the steps. Let me get to step two, the God step. Well, I was raised Southern Baptist, and the white Jesus hadn't done a lot for me. So I was a bit skeptical about the God step. But my sponsor explained it to me this way. He said, look, dude, you've been coming to these meetings for a little while. You've heard all their stories. They drank like you drank. They did the things that you did. So you've got two options. Option number one, everybody's a liar. Option number two, maybe you're wrong about the spiritual solution. What sounds more logical to you? I came to believe. I don't hold with this we got to find God thing. I hear a lot of people talk about that. I got to find God. I got to find God. Hey, God's not lost. He knows where he's at. It was my drunk ass that was wandering the wilderness. Perhaps I need to trust the process and let my God find me. Okay? So I move to the third step, which to me is my solution. To me, the third step is the solution. In my text, it's broken down into three parts. Okay? The problem, the solution, and because I'm an alcoholic, I need a reward. All right? The problem. I want what I want, and I want it now. I want some of this, most of that, half of that, and I want all of that. All right? I want whatever I think I need. I will take from you what I think I deserve and justify it. I'm the kind of guy who, if I work really hard and do everything right and I don't get what I want, something must be wrong. Not once do I think that maybe God does not want me to have what I want to have. It's my own self-centeredness and selfishness that is the problem. What's the solution? It's one paragraph on the bottom of page 62. Here's a how and why of it. First and foremost, we had to quit playing God. It did not work. What does that mean to me? Well, it means that I need to define what my job is and then define what God's job is. My job is the process, and I am responsible for the process. The results belong to God. If I am overvested in what I'm going to get, what I want, what I think I need, if I'm overvested in that, then I can't be in God's will. I cannot be in God's will. A true test of the third step for me is, am I willing to face my worst nightmare and accept it as God's will, if that be his will for me. If I can do that, if I can do that, then I'm comfortable in the third step. That's a tough way for a guy like me to live. It really is. It's a tough way for a guy like me to live. I'm going to need a reward. I'm going to need to get something for that. And it's listed on page 63. We call it the third step promises. When we sincerely took such a position, remarkable things happened. Huh? We found out that all our needs were met as long as we did two things: stay close to God and do His work well. If I can do that, all my needs will be met. Now, for those of you who are new, let's talk about faith and trust. There's a difference, okay? Trust is consistent, observed behavior over time. Huh? Will the sun come up tomorrow? I don't know. But I trust that it will because I have seen it come up so many days before. All right? Faith is just a belief. If you're new, you don't have trust. You don't have trust. You have not seen what this program can do. I have. I trust this process. But if you're new, you don't. So what do? You have faith. You have faith that the people in these rooms are telling you the truth. And if you listen and you're a real alcoholic, you'll know. You'll know. So I took the third step. I was thorough. I was honest. I made a decision. And I sat back and rested on my laurels. Yeah, it's a big deal, that decision, isn't it? I made it. And my sponsor pointed out the joining paragraph between steps 3 and 4. Remember that joining paragraph? It's right there on page 63. Don't want to mess this up. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step. What decision? Turn my will and my life over to the care of God. It could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which have been blocking us from the sunlight of His magnificent Spirit. Although I have made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him, God can't get to me because I got a whole lot of stuff standing between me and Him. So I have to get down with the inventory. We make such a business. No, I statements. I made such a business out of the fourth step. Oh, man, the fourth step. Oh, Jesus, I got to write all this stuff down. Let's take a look at what the fourth step actually is. It's a pissed off list. Well, if you were like me, you were pissed off at everybody and everything. So, that's not hard. It's a fears list. Well, I write down all the things I'm afraid of. If you were like me, I was afraid of everything. I was afraid that you wouldn't like me. I was afraid you would. I was afraid I wouldn't get what I wanted. Oh, what happens if I get too much of what I want? I was afraid of everything. So I write everything down. And then there's a sexual inventory. Whereat I arouse suspicion and jealousy. Whereat I cause problems in my interpersonal relationships. That was every relationship I had ever been in. That's not hard. So basically, you just write down your life. No big deal. So I did that. I wrote my resentments up. I did my first three columns and whatnot. And I'm ready now to do the fourth column. And I told my sponsor, let's do this fourth column. I want to see my part. And he said, ho, wait. Let's go back and take a look at the book. Because in the book, before you get to the fourth column, after you finish the third column, you have to release the resentment. How can I honestly and objectively look at my part in stuff if I still hold a resentment to that person? So I had to release that resentment. Then I went back to my list and wrote down my part. What came out is I was a pretty self-centered, selfish, fearful man. The world dominated me, although I did not think it did. And from there, we were able to pull out my defects of character, which, by the way, I did not see as defects. I saw them as coping skills. You know? This is what I used as armor to protect me from you. These were my tools to get what I wanted. These were my weapons to get back at you when you hurt me. These were not defects. I needed these. And step six had to prepare me to let those go, to be able to stand naked in front of the world with just me and God and be okay with that. My sponsor kept me at step six for quite a while. He wanted to make sure I was willing to do what I had said I was going to do, which was to give up these defects of character. Things began to change right around that time for me. My sponsor was a big guy. He said, T knows him, you can't have more steps than months. All right? And I believed him. He also said that the sponsee buys the sponsor breakfast once a week. I believe that too. I got you. So I did this. I took time. I examined my bad behavior. And I made a decision to change. And with God's help, I was able to remove the most glaring of those defects. A step. My list was right there in the fourth. Put that together. Now, the ninth step was tough because, see, I didn't like going to say I'm sorry to people. And that's what I thought an amends was. But my sponsor used to do B&Es. He used to break in people's houses and steal their stuff. Okay? And as one of his amends, he had to knock on people's door and say, excuse me, you don't know me, but you used to have a color console television sitting right over here. And I broke in your house and took it. And for me not to get loaded today, huh? I got to make that right. An amends doesn't mean, dude, I'm sorry. Okay? An amends means to repair. That's what I was taught. To repair, to fix, to mend. Tough as amends was Bank of America. Because, see, those places I was going to cash those forged payroll checks, yeah, it's the place I had my account at. Like I said, I'm not really a criminal. Okay? So I had to go to B of A, and I had to make an amends, but I didn't want to. Because, see, I had the money, but I had worked very hard for that money. And the B of A had plenty of money. They weren't going to give me a bank account. Hell, I stole from them. So what do I get out of this? So I became one of those what-do-you-think guys that we see around the fellowship, you know? Those guys that run around saying, what do you think, 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 what do you think? Huh? What do you think? What do you think? What do you think? The guy looking for somebody to buy into my BS so I can do what I want to do. My sponsor pulled me aside. He said, here's the deal. You're going to go into the B of A, and you're going to pay them the money. And, oh, by the way, shut the F up. Nobody wants to hear your nonsense. It hurt my feelings. I got me a little cashier's check. It wasn't a little check, actually. And I went into the B of A. And I said, my name is, and this is what I did, and I'm here to make that right. And the lady said, thank you very much. And she took my cashier's check. No balloons fell from the ceiling. No choir sang. I didn't get a bank account. But I walked out of that bank, man. For the first time in my life, I felt like a grown-up. You know what I'm saying? See, babies and alcoholics make messes for other people to clean up. For the first time in my life, I was handling my business. I was cleaning up my own mess. It was the greatest amends I ever made. The greatest amends I ever made. I changed. I don't know how it happened. Yeah, I do. But I can't tell you. I can't tell you that I intended to change. Didn't realize it really had happened until I was like 6 years sober. And my father caught the cancer. Okay? And they gave him 6 months to live. And being the overachievers that we are in our family, I got a call about 3 months later and said, if you want to see your father alive again. You need to get home right away. So I flew home. I flew back to Alabama, where they had retired to. And I dropped my bags off, kissed my mom, my sister, and I went back in the bedroom because my father wanted to die in his own bed. And Pop, he came out of that morphine haze. He came out of that morphine haze just long enough for us to have that talk. In 45 minutes, we had the chat. He told me about the safe deposit box. He told me about the insurance papers. He told me about the cards. And the last thing he asked me, he said, son, I need you to look in on your mama from time to time. My father was leaving with me, in my care, his most prized possession, his wife of 50-some-odd years. I said, Pop, I got it. And he smiled, and he said, I know you do. 2 days later, my father was coughing. I was holding him up in my arms. And my daddy left me. And I closed his eyes. I laid him down. And I comforted my mother and my sister at the foot of the bed. Who is this guy? I'm the guy who runs when things get bad. I'm the guy who cannot handle heavy emotion. But there I was, man. There I was picking out clothes for my father to be buried in. There I was working with the minister on the eulogy. There I was calling the relatives, telling them to come on down for the funeral. There I was contacting the Navy so my daddy could get his flag. There I was standing up and stepping up, leaning into it. Where did I learn how to do that? I learned it here. I learned it from you. Alcoholics Anonymous has slowly allowed me to become the man I have always wanted to be, but never had the courage to be. I'm walking through some stuff now. So let's just eliminate this happy bullshit, okay? Right? If you're new and somebody's told you, come in and do this, you'll be happy. All right? That may not be the case. Some of us have tra-la-la recovery, but for some of us, life does show up. It's not about being happy. It's about being okay right here, even when you're not. Either God is or he is not. It's not that I don't trust God. It's I just don't trust him with all my stuff. God, you can have my alcoholism. But that hottie over there, I got that. It's no qualifier here. It's all or none. It's all or none. And I struggle with that. I struggle with that daily. I want so badly to give you what I've received here. I want so badly for everyone to make it. But truth be told, everyone won't. And my experience has shown me that many, some in this very room, will die of alcoholism. Who's it going to be? Which one of us is going to die? What am I willing to do today, to keep my seat? All I've ever wanted was a chance. All I've ever wanted was a chance. So every morning I wake up and I admit, I come to believe, I make a decision, I clean house, I trust God. I reach my hand out and back for an alcoholic who still may be suffering as a result of doing those simple things. I get to put my head on my pillow tonight sober. If I can do that, then there's a chance that tomorrow will be better than today. If there is no God, man, I am in real trouble. If you're new, I got some good news and some bad news. The good news, we have found a solution to your problem. The bad news, we're it. Embrace the horror. If you're afraid of what may happen tonight, next week, next year, that's all right. That's all right. We will lend you our courage until you find your own. If you don't believe in God, that's cool. Believe in us. Do what we do, and your God will find you. It's a million-dollar program, y'all. But it's being shoved up my ass a nickel at a time, baby. Slow Bridey. Slow Bridey. Nothing has happened quickly for this alcoholic. But I guarantee you, if you do this deal, and as it has been taught to me, and it's probably being taught to you, if you do this deal, you will solve your problem with alcohol. Rarely have we seen someone fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Gotta warn you, two-steppers. Okay? Gotta warn you. The two-stepper is the guy who has the first step down cold, powerless. And then he goes out and works that 12th part of the 12th step that says carry the message. But 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, he ain't got time. But when life throws a big lump of coal on your ass, and things start going all kinds of crazy, you're going to need the rest of them steps. This is not a one-time, one-shot deal. And by the way, this is not talk therapy, and I'm not Dr. Phil. We got to do the work to stay. Walk with us on this path, y'all. Stay with us. We need you. We need you. I need you. My name is DK, and I'm an alcoholic.